Hey everybody, welcome to Marvel Champions Monthly, a fan podcast about the card game Marvel Champions by Fantasy Flight Games. I'm one of your hosts, Kennedy Hawk. Today I have two co-hosts with me. I have Crimson. How's it going, Crimson?
Hey, I'm still here.
And we have Americano. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you doing?
Things are going just marvelous. Black Widow's in. Doctor Strange is on the way. Super excited to play and talk about Marvel Champions. And talk we shall. We got lots to talk about this week. We'll get kicked off with some news. So FFG is having an Ask Me Anything on May 14th through the FFG live stream. If you want to ask questions to that, you'll have to go sign up at the FFG community forums. Look under the Marvel Champions forum, and the very first pinned post is an Ask Me Anything thread for questions. We do have some news from our podcast and from some of the other community content creators around the globe. So we've been posting a ton of articles on our Podbean website. If you haven't checked them out, you should make sure to go there and do so. I'll put some links to a couple of them in the show notes here. We've got a couple article series going on. Americano is doing an article series where he looks at hero kit inspections, doing a quick glance at all the different heroes. He's three or four heroes in at this point. We've got our Shield Training Basics, which is a new player series. We've done three articles so far, one on playing your first game, building your first deck, and learning how to take quality mulligans, so check those out as well. And then we put a challenge out to the community. It's called the Clobberin Time Challenge. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. And then other content creators have started writing articles too, so if you're interested in reading content, the Alter Egos podcast has two articles out. They're really good. They're really in-depth, so prepare for a very intense but quality read. And the Side Scheme has been still putting out 2 to 3 really good articles a week, talking about their draft, talking about new player tactics, some similar topics to us, and they've been really great to read. So check out those podcast websites and blogs for more information on their articles. So, have you guys been playing Marvel Champions?
Yes. The answer is yes.
I have not been. I've been playing a lot of Arkham Horror and Conan Exiles.
It's almost like you need them to release products or something in the U.S. and then you can play again.
Yeah.
Or you can go along with, you know, these fan-made challenges like the Clobberin Time Challenge.
Yeah, sadly one of my guys in the playgroups hates anything not official. So we've been going back and forth. I've tried to get him to do a little bit of the custom stuff, but it's just not his thing, which is cool.
Well, we'll have to explain the Clobberin Time thing to you. It's not custom. You don't have to use any custom cards for it, but there's an article on the MCM blog, and what it is you're going to play through the 6 officially released FFG villains, but you have a deck building restriction, and your restriction is that you can only use each hero once on a recorded win. So you play each villain until you win, and then you record that deck in a spreadsheet. So if you play She-Hulk against Rhino, you don't get to use She-Hulk again. You're only able to use each non-unique card. So like for Justice, you can only use 3 times throughout the 6 wins that you record. So that means you're only going to get 3 Avengers Mansions and 3 Energies and things like that. And you can only use each unique card once. So you're only going to get 1 Nick Fury. And we've gotten really good feedback on it so far. It's really going to challenge your deck building strategy. You'll find cards that you thought were auto-includes you don't necessarily need in every deck to win. You really have to strategize out for multiple games what cards you can use and what cards you need to save for different villains.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. The Clobberin Time looks fun as all get up. No, I'm just saying, like, I like custom stuff, and it would be nice to play more custom stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah, I will say that I've been playing a lot of She-Hulk, nod to Crimson.
Woo-hoo!
And I do rag on her Gamma Slam, but I have to eat my words because it did save me against my match with Rhino. So I will say that. 14 damage to Rhino with Gamma Slam, finishing him off with my basic attack. So that was an exciting thing. Like I said, when Gamma Slam works, it works.
Gamma Slam's great. It's not my favorite card in her kit, but it is it's probably number 2. My favorite card is obviously Split Personality. That card is busted OP.
I decided to ignore your advice, and I played She-Hulk Aggression against Rhino, and it did not go well against me. So I'm on Mutagen formula for my Clobberin Time Challenge. So I've gotten my first 4 wins, and I've lost once, and it was against Rhino, embarrassingly, with She-Hulk Aggression. So The other videos will be on YouTube eventually. I have to finish editing them, but so far only my loss and then beating him the second time is up.
Yeah, aggression doesn't work very well with She-Hulk in a solo environment because you don't have enough thwarting capacity.
Speaking of She-Hulk, there was a new ruling today about She-Hulk that I saw on Discord. Superhuman strength. You know how it says when you perform an attack, discard this card and the opponent becomes stunned or the attackee becomes stunned?
Yep.
Someone submitted a rules question because they said, well, that's kind of weird. If it's +2 attack and I play uppercut, it's going to discard this card, but I don't get the +2 damage out of it. So that's like a really low investment card in their opinion. So Caleb responded to this ruling.
And it should say,
the next time you perform a basic attack, discard this card and stun the opponent. So that makes superhuman strength way better, in my opinion.
Honestly, that's how I've always played it. I didn't even think about it the other way. But yeah, according to the wording, it would be that way. But I've always played it as if it said basic attack.
Yeah, it's going to make counter punches swing for 5. So I'm super excited for She-Hulk now that I know how to play her correctly. So next RRG update, look for that.
It will still discard itself after the first counterpunch.
No, because it won't be a basic attack anymore. That just says deal damage to them equal to your hero's attack value. So if you had counter, you could just play that buff and sit there forever with it and just only use counter punches to kill the villain.
Protection for the win.
Yeah, She-Hulk protection looks better and better every month.
Every errata, it's great. But no, Clobbering Time Challenge has been great. I think we've had 4 people on Discord do it. We had 2 people on Marvel CDB and 3 on Facebook. So we're getting into the double digits for our statistics on it. Hopefully I'll go 6-1, not 6-12. But I'm running out of cards that are good to use for Mutagen Formula and Wrecking Crew. So I'm not confident. How did your games go, Americano?
I played the first 2 scenarios. So I did She-Hulk Justice and I just mentioned how that went. And then I did Iron Man Protection against Claw. And unfortunately, the first match I did lose. I couldn't get the side schemes under control. And he got way too many Masters of Evil minions out. And I just got overwhelmed. And I probably flipped too soon because I felt the pressure from the minions. But then the second game was a nail biter towards the end. He attacked me and got some pretty big boosts and knocked me down to 1. But then I was able to do a repulsor blast. I did a repulsor blast the turn before and did, I think it was 11 damage. So that's always fun.
Well, awesome. Let's move on to our 2 topics for today. We've got 2 main topics, 2 segments. First up is the Carol Danvers Casual Champions Corner. That's a lot of C's and 1 D. And once we wrap that up, we'll do a Jennifer Walters Rules Lawyer debate. So let's get kicked off with the Carol Danvers Casual Champions Corner.
Alpha Flight Station Android activated.
So there's been a lot of posts recently on Reddit and Facebook and Discord saying, you know what, this game is awesome, but I don't really like deck building. I just use the pre-built decks and sometimes I struggle. I wish there was, you know, an easier way to do deck building that didn't require me to sort of tinker with my deck over and over again until I come up with some iteration I like. And I've talked with other people. I have a friend, Chris, who says, you know, I play this game like the game Smash Up. I don't know. Have you guys ever played Smash Up?
I do. I have played it. I do own it, actually.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now also. It's on my shelf.
Yeah, so Smash Up is a game, it's called like a shuffle building game, I think they call it, by AEG. And you choose 2 factions of 20 cards and you shuffle them together. And that's the only deck construction mechanic. So you combine ninjas and pirates and you have the pirate ninja deck, or robots and dinosaurs, or dinosaurs and pirates. And then you battle over bases to try to win some competitive game. Well, my friend Chris pointed out to me, he said, you could play Marvel Champions the same way. He said, you could, you know, you have 8 heroes to pick from so far, assuming you have Black Widow, unless you're Crimson. And you have 4 aspects. So if you made a 25-card deck for each aspect and you went to your friends, you could say, here, pick whatever aspect you want. Pick whatever hero you want. Bingo, bango, shuffle these 2 things together. You've got a deck. So each of us within our aspect has built a 25-card superhero smash-up deck. So we're going to go through those superhero smash-up decks.
Commence Justice training sequence.
Well, I guess it looks like you're up first, Crimson.
Okay, gimme. I should have been more prepared. I'm loading my images right now. So, I tried to go a little less basic cards than I normally do. That was a big one for me. I wanted people to enjoy the flavor of the aspect versus just the basic cards. So, for the basic cards, I did obviously want to have some kind of resource generation, so I went with one Helicarrier, one Avengers Mansion, and then one of each of the double resources. And then, for obvious reasons, I wanted one Nick and one Mockingbird. Ally this is going to be a little bit of an ally-heavy Justice deck, but I figure for new players or players who've only played the starter deck, allies really are a good crutch to lean on in the beginning of the game. And they're both spies, which will be very important later. I did go with the 3 for Justice. That is kind of the pinnacle card of Justice decks. And I really feel that if you're playing Justice, you're really looking at those cards. 2 of the Power of Justice, because that's all you can have. And it works great with 4 Justice and a couple other cards. I went with 2 Under Surveillance. And I'm just going to read the card just in case, because it is out of a pack versus the core. And that is cost 2, it's an upgrade. Attached to the main scheme, max 1 per scheme. Increase that main scheme's thresh value by 4. It allows you on people like Rhino to have a little extra turn. It usually equates to 1, maybe 2 extra turns, but it is very good when you're down at the wire. Even though I said it was kind of a trappy card, I went with Stealth Strike because it can give you some damage in and some threat removal. And I put 3 of them in there. I still think it's a little too expensive, but it will work for what you need it to do, and definitely worth running. For a little bit more threat management, I went with 3 counterintelligences, which is a 2-cost upgrade preparation skill, max 1 per player. Interrupt, now it's not a hero interrupt, so you can do it in Alter Ego or Normal. When any amount of threat would be placed on the main scheme, discard counterintelligence, prevent 3 of that threat. So it's a 4 justice that sits on the table. It's a very nice card to have. I put 1 Agent Coulson in because you can only have 1. And Agent Coulson is really nice because he lets you grab a preparation card, which you could grab the counterintelligence. But I'm also running 1 Spycraft. And Agent Coulson lets you pull the card from the discard pile. So if you draw a Spycraft early and you don't have one of the allies that's a spy out, you can just use it as a resource and then pull it out of the grave with Agent Coulson. And Agent Coulson is a spy, so it allows you to play Spycraft because you do have a spy on the table. And Spycraft costs 1, it's a preparation. Play only if you control a spy character. Interrupt, when you reveal an encounter card, discard Spycraft, cancel the effects of that card and discard it, then reveal another card from the encounter deck. This isn't really like a counter spell. It's more of a, oh, I am not ready to hit that Shadows of the Past card right now. That's why there's only 1 of them in there. It's just kind of a hand-in-hand with the Agent Coulson that's in there. I am running the Quake, because while she is amazing and probably my favorite Justice card right now, and like I said, it is a little heavy on allies, so I am running the Daredevil and the Jessica Jones. Allies just give you that soak, that little bit of crutch that you may need starting out the game or learning this aspect in general. I would definitely say as you get into more hardcore modes, you will probably drop a couple allies to more define your character. But when we're looking at, hey, you can put this with any character, the allies really are a good choice to run. And that's my 25 cards.
Sweet. So are there any characters that you think that this set of 25 really works well with or struggles with? Any hero kits?
I think it works really well with Iron Man, actually. it gives Iron Man the time he needs to set up, because you got the extra allies, you got pretty much running six Four Justices, and you get a little bit of damage with the shore strikes, and then once you got his suit built, he just wrecks through everything else. I'm not big on Black Panther, and I'm generally not big on Black Panther as a justice character. I think he's way better as a leadership character. I don't think it would struggle, but I don't think you would be really reaching your max peak with either Black Panther or Thor. I think Thor would want to be more aggressive than this. This is more of a build and set. Now with Black Panther, you are building his suit, but he plays very differently than Iron Man.
Totally. And you had no concussive blows in there, right? That's the one that causes confusion, but you need fists, and not everybody has fists, so that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm not really hip on that card, because I don't think confusion is... I consider confusion worth about half of a stun.
Really? I'm the opposite. I play characters that want to flip all the time, and I always feel like I can't flip, but if I had that confusion, I'd feel safe.
Yeah, so did you say you're running three Four Justices and three Counterintelligence? Is that right?
I am.
Yeah, I actually agree with that, because Counterintelligence will stop any amount of threat on the main scheme, but what happens when you get those side schemes in play, Four Justice will let you remove that, right? So I don't think that a Counterintelligence, I've seen the argument that it replaces Four Justice, and I don't think that's necessarily the case.
Yeah, I don't think it replaces Four Justice. And again, if I was building this in a more constructed towards a Pacific hero, I'd probably drop a Counterintelligence and maybe even a Four Justice and run two and two. But just because we're looking at cards that we could throw in with any hero, I wanted to really give the flavor of the aspect, which is the threat removal. I do agree. Four Justice is better than Counterintelligence because of the fact that you can hit the side schemes with it. And you can actually do four instead of three. But I'm really digging Counterintelligence right now.
Commence leadership training sequence.
So for leadership, it's pretty interesting. I thought about it, and there's kind of two themes for leadership decks right now. There's ones that are all about, like, you know, just getting allies out and burning through them. And there's ones that are all about pumping your hero stats using teamwork and using morale boost. But those are sort of two flavors of leadership, and I wanted to give a taste of both. So I sort of split the cards between those two thought patterns. So I'll start with resources. I included two power of leadership and the three basic resources, energy, genius, and strength. So you're playing allies. Allies are expensive. You're going to want to have resources. I included nine events. So I included two copies of teamwork, because that'll let you keep your allies out there longer and push that stat onto your hero. I included two copies of strength and numbers, because again, a lot of times your ally gets to one health left. You don't want them to go away, because you want to chump block with them. So you don't want to just leave them standing. You may as well turn them into card draw. And I included two copies of Make the Call, because I think that is really good in solo and in multiplayer. Because in multiplayer, you'll have even more targets. I also like Make the Call because each hero's signature ally is usually really, really strong. Like, it's something you always want to get out there. Well, Make the Call lets you mulligan that at the beginning of the game when you can't afford it and pull it back later when you have resources. So that's pretty cool. I included three copies of First Aid. That's a card that I think should be in every leadership deck, because your allies are your bread and butter. The longer you can keep them out with First Aid, the better off you're going to be. So that's resources and events. Just like Crimson, I included one Avengers Mansion, one Helicarrier. I didn't do a Quinjet, and you'll notice I didn't do like Avengers Assembled, because right now there's only one character that's not an Avenger, that's Miss Marvel. But potentially there could be more in the future, so I didn't want to take like the Avengers sub-theme and say, yeah, smash this up with any hero, because you might have a bunch of dead cards, and that'd be unfortunate. All right, so that supports ally selection. This is where I really struggled, because there's so many allies in leadership and they're all good. But if you cram them all in, you end up with like 10 to 11 allies, which is too many. So I put in from leadership, Maria Hill, Squirrel Girl, and Wonder Man, because two cost allies are great. When you can play an ally for one card using one of your resource cards, it's just pure value. And then I put in Falcon as my one expensive ally from leadership, because he sort of gives you that information from the top of the deck, which can be very useful, and he's just got a pretty big beefy stat line, so he'll stay out long enough that you'll be able to use strength in numbers or use teamwork, and that'll work pretty well. For basic allies, I did not include Mockingbird, and this was a very difficult decision. I almost brought a 41 card deck, but I felt bad, so I included Nick Fury and Heimdall. I think Heimdall, even though he's really expensive, is just an amazing value card, whether in solo or multiplayer. Getting to look at the top of the encounter deck and pick what your next card is going to be is just really, really, really good. And he comes with a big beefy stat line again, so he'll stay out for a long time so you can use those buffs with your allies. I included two copies of Rapid Response to round out the deck, and that's the new preparation from Black Widow's kit. So if a character leaves play, if a character is defeated, so not if they're discarded, you'll be able to bring them back by getting rid of this upgrade. And I think that's a great investment too. So you use it turn one with Power of Leadership, and then you can trigger it on whichever ally is the most important to bring back into play. So it pained me. I put a lot of two ofs, right? I think I put 3 2-ofs in events and 1 2-ofs in upgrades. Usually I'm always like putting threes or ones into my decks, and this time it works out a little different. But I've tried it with three heroes. It even worked okay with She-Hulk because there's a lot of card draw in it. So that was kind of cool. I included one copy of the Triskelion too. I was only at 39 cards there for a second, just so you can have more allies. But yeah, I tried it with She-Hulk because she's always one that I worry about. And I tried it with Thor. Anybody with a lower hand size usually struggles. That's why I included so many resource cards.
I was going to ask if you did add the Triskelion, because I didn't hear it before. So,
no, it's sitting right there. I'm just staring at it and thinking, yeah, that's in every deck. Why should I point that out? And then I was like, nope. Yeah, I thought for a long time. I thought about going Vision, and I tried to avoid things that required a certain resource type, right? Like Vision needs energy resources, and there's all sorts of cards that need the Avengers trait. And that can be really tough because some heroes have more or less of different resource types, and they might not have like an affinity for the same resource type as that aspect. So I avoided anything like that.
Yeah, no, I definitely like the staples that you did choose to run. Like Teamwork, I think, is a great card. It really belongs in a leadership deck. But then, of course, you know, the make the call is the quintessential leadership card. Like, it's usually the first leadership card I add into my leadership decks.
Yeah, I built this, and then I built it on Marvel CDB, and then, you know, you scroll at the top, and it tells you how many cards are in your deck. And it was, like, 53 cards, and I was like, well, that's bad. Now I got to remove 13 things. This is no good.
You know, I get a lot of people who talk about building their decks on programs like that, and I can't. I'm a guy who needs to have the cards laid out in front of me. I need to be able to move them around in different piles. I need that texture when deck building, and I've never been able to do it on those kind of websites.
As an engineer, I need all the data. So I build it on Marvel CDB, and you click the little stats tab, and it's like, here's a pie chart of your energy. Here's a pie chart of your costs. Here's a bar chart of your costs. And I say, ah, that's what I needed. I don't have to do the math now.
Yeah, I guess I like doing the math.
Commence protection training sequence.
All right. So I'm going to talk about my basic cards first. So I added Strength, Energy, and Genius. Avengers Mansion and Helicarrier. I added Nick Fury, and Kennedy and I did not talk about this, but I actually did not include Mockingbird, but I did include Heimdall. He's an expensive ally, but for protection, you kind of need some damage output, and he can offer that. And it goes really well. It pairs really well with another card, a protection card that I added in. To throw everybody off, I added two cards that are basic. One of the things that I actually really love about protection is that it's a pretty reactionary aspect. You do a lot of things on the villain phase. And that often means that you might have a hand of one or two cards, maybe, or zero cards when it comes to the hero phase, because you've done all these cool things like counterpunch or, you know, get behind me or preemptive strike or something, right? But I suggest adding two copies of an enhanced card. And this might be cheating a little bit because the enhanced cards are so, there's three different types. But just take your pick. If, and I know that, yeah, maybe this is cheating a little bit. That's okay. So two enhanced cards just so that you can get the resources on the villain phase without having to discard more cards, I think is really beneficial for protection players.
Those are the ones where you pay X amount and then put it into play. It comes in with the tokens, and then you can remove the tokens to gain a resource of that value.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I because I'm an old school Magic player, I call those mana batteries. But yeah, I think they can be very good in those kind of decks.
Yeah, and so yeah, in a general all-purpose protection deck, I think that a couple of those are kind of necessary in order to be able to be effective as well on the player phase. You might be able to do a lot more on the villain phase, but if you want to get that extra oomph in the player phase, I think these are good to add in. Then over to the protection cards. All right, I added two defensive stances. I think that the fact that you can stop three damage from any source, it doesn't have to be an attack, is really versatile. So that's, I think that's, you know, when I'm thinking of when you're playing, maybe I'm the only person that plays this still, is the risky business, and you're going to receive four damage or indirect damage, right? You can, it's not an attack, so that's a great card to have out on the table. I do run one, I recommend running one armored vest, and that's because you're going to want to stay in hero form as long as possible. And so you might actually need to defend, even if your defense is a base one as a hero. Two med teams, and this is the card I was kind of referencing with Heimdall, is I love med team healing my allies. And yeah, Heimdall is a great, he's the basic ally that I would heal with this. And then the protection allies, I have one Luke Cage, and that's it. Just Luke Cage, Heimdall, and Nick Fury, the allies. And the reason is because you have all these other events that you really want to play on the villain phase, and you should be able to heal enough with maybe some med teams or use preemptive strike. I recommend two preemptive strikes to minimize the damage that the villain's going to provide or hit you with on his attack. So you should be able to minimize the damage you're taking, and I feel like you don't need as many blockers because you want the events or the upgrades. You have two get behind me's. This one is, I went back and forth on this one. I think it's a really good card because it fills a gap in the treachery that it might bring up Shadows of the Past, right? But it's going to cancel that when revealed effect. Yeah, the villain's going to attack you, but that's fine. You have other tools in your kit. I think Get Behind Me is actually, the more I thought about it, is kind of necessary in a protection deck. And then you got three energy barriers. I love the ping damage back onto the villain or other some annoying minions. And then only one power protection, because there is only one heavy or one protection ally that's expensive. Everything else is not super expensive, so the power protection card, I don't think you need to run two in this deck. Oh, I don't think I mentioned, did I mention the two indomitable as well? So that you can use actually use your basic defense and then ready back up if you have to defend again. That's an aspect or something you can do. I think I really like that because, yeah, you're going to get hit for the villain's base attack, but you can eliminate the boost icons and hit them back to the villain. And that's why I also added one armored vest, because it might help eliminate or reduce the amount of damage that you're going to actually end up taking.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And you didn't pull a Crimson and throw in a bunch of Doctor Strange cards that aren't out yet.
Yeah.
You restrained yourself. That's nice.
I think the only card that I feel is missing would be the endurances for lower health heroes, but that's okay. You get somebody. Yeah, if like you randomly, you know, if you were doing this like draft format where you would take the cards that we said and you roll and see which aspect you chose, and then chose a random hero. If you got somebody like Black Widow, it would be a little rough due to the very low health. But almost all the other characters have 10 or 11 plus. So I think, you know, it feels good. I like that setup that you did there. The Heimdall is very good. He's a very beefy character. And I think he's a great inclusion in protection. I know just me, it would be hard for me not to include Black Widow, because I'm an old school blue magic player who likes to counterspell stuff. But I think for newer players or people who are going from starter decks to this, Black Widow is a little bit more complicated, her ally card. And I like what you did with it. You made it more simple, more easier to transition, and then as people grow, they can upgrade and include more complicated card mechanics.
Exactly. And you talked about the low health thing, and I forgot to mention that one of the really nice things about all those low health heroes is most of the low health heroes have like a defense card of some type that helps them get out of things, right? Black Widow has a ton of damage mitigation cards in her kit. Tony Stark has a ton of plus health upgrades. So hopefully even those characters with low health have something that helps them with that in their hero kit.
Yeah, and just so the listeners can get an idea, I think that one of my favorite combos with this is get Heimdall out, and then he's going to let you look at the top three cards of the encounter deck, discard one, put the other two back in any order. And if you have Preemptive Strike in your hand, that can really determine what you're going to do with Preemptive Strike, if you're going to use it for a resource or if you're going to hold on to it and not discard it and take the attack and in the anticipation of using that encounter card as the boost.
Commence aggression training sequence.
Well, Lester wasn't able to make it, so I whipped up an aggression deck really quick. And I'm sure he'll tell us on Facebook how bad it is and correct it for me, but I thought I'd go over it for people listening. So I'll go over the basic cards since you guys had a good format first. So I included the three basic energies, energy or basic resources, energy, genius, and strength. I put in three allies. I put in Mockingbird, Nick Fury, and then I put in a Lockjaw, because I think one of the things aggression really struggles with is threat control. Like aggression's main plan for threat control is kill the villain fast, which doesn't always work. But Lockjaw can be this, you know, two thwart on a stick. If you need to thwart or you're going to lose the game, you can burn your whole hand and play him from your discard pile and he'll save your day. And then the other basics, I included one downtime. That's the one that gives you plus recovery. Since you're going to be always wanting to attack, you're not going to be defending a lot. So you're probably going to have to flip and heal every once in a while. And I put two copies of Enhanced Physique that provides the physical fist resource, and you'll see why. So for aggression cards, I put in two Power of Aggression. I put in three copies of Uppercut, three copies of Melee, and three copies of Chase Them Down. I did not include any copies of Relentless Assault, because you don't always know if there's going to be minions. And at least Melee can hit for three, but Relentless Assault, if there's no minions on the board, just can't do anything. I think you kind of have to include Chase Them Down because you need some kind of threat control, so you're banking on a small minion showing up at some point. For upgrades, I put one Combat Training and one Yarnbjorn, because I think you have enough fist resources plus the Enhanced Physique in this deck that you're going to be able to trigger Yarnbjorn a lot because you have a lot of attack cards. For I'm an ally person, as you're going to be able to tell. I put in Tigra and Valkyrie as aggression allies, so that's five additional allies in a combination to your signature ally. I put Tigra in just because she can be a good chump blocker and she can take out little minions, and I put Valkyrie because she's got that like surgy pump ability with energy resources, which can be really helpful. And then I finished it off by including Hall of Heroes, which I think is pretty much a you must include unless you're only playing against Rhino with some modular set that has no minions in it. But Hall of Heroes is almost too good to pass up in aggression. So that's the aggression deck I made. What would you guys change?
Did you add any mean swings? I didn't hear that.
So I did not, because not all heroes have a weapon, right? So you'd get Yarnbjorn, but that's a one-of card. So I didn't want to include three copies of a card that might be dead in my deck if Yarnbjorn, you know, becomes that first Ultron drone, or if it's the bottom card in my deck. It had me nervous.
I'm fine with that. I think that that's, you know, I think that's a good call.
Aggression's really strange because a lot of its cards really depend on minions being in play, right? Valkyrie is only going to do things against minions. Tigra is going to do things against minions. Hercules is going to do things against minions. Chase them down, relentless assault. That was Superhero Smash Up. So I'm going to take each of these decks in the next 2 weeks and make a YouTube video with each one of them, doing solo against some villain. So watch our Facebook for those channels.
You should bust out the dice and do random villain, random hero, random aspect.
That's a great idea. We'll prove that these can work with any hero by me randomly selecting a hero. Oh, I love this. All right, let's move on to our second topic for today. We are in the Jennifer Walters Rules Lawyer debate. All right, so the topic for today's Rules Lawyer debate is all going to be about what a villain activation is. So I'm going to do a lot of talking, and then you guys are going to have some quiz questions to answer, and we can debate about what those answers should be, because some of them, I think, are still open questions or open cases. So there's been a lot of, and I mean seriously, a lot of talk about what happens when a villain activates and what order do things happen in. So we're going to cover that, but we're going to start by looking at the only evidence we have, the RRG. So in the rules reference guide during the villain phase, it says the steps of the villain phase are: step one, we don't care about that. That's when you place threat in the scheme. But step two, the villain activates once per player. For each activation, any minions engaged with the player also activate. So we can take that and go to the activation entry in the RRG. And this is where you'll see the RRG is really this giant maze. For activation, it says, if the villain attacks or schemes, it is considered an activation. During step two of the villain phase, the villain activates once per player. If the player resolving the activation is in hero form, the villain attacks. If they're in alter ego form, the villain schemes. Some card abilities also cause the villain to attack. Those are extra activations. Each time the villain activates, the villain is given a boost card. So still, there's nothing about, you know, how does an attack or scheme go off? So we have to go all the way to an entry called enemy attacks. There's another one for enemy schemes, but we're going to focus on enemy attacks for today. So to resolve an enemy attack, follow these steps. Step one, if a villain is attacking, give it one face-down boost card from the encounter deck. If a minion is attacking, skip this step. Step two, if a player wishes to defend, that player exhausts a hero or ally as the defender. If a player other than the target player defends, the defending player becomes the target for this attack. Step three, if a villain is attacking, flip each of the villain's boost cards face up one at a time. Then, in order, resolve any boost abilities, so those star abilities, increase the villain's attack by one for each boost icon, and discard each boost card after it is resolved. Step four, deal damage from an attack equal to the attacking villain's attack. Read that wrong. Deal damage from the attack equal to the attacking villain or minion's modified attack value based on the following. If the hero defends, you'll subtract their defense from the attack stat. If an ally defends, all damage from the attack is dealt to the ally, unless it has overkill. If no character defends, the attack is considered undefended and all damage is dealt to the identity of the resolving of the character resolving this activation. So there's four steps that they list in there, and we're going to see if those four steps are enough to resolve some tricky situations in Marvel Champions. So pop quiz time. evidence for case A. So I'm going to set up case A for you guys. Case A is one we've talked about before with status cards. So Crimson, you're playing Spider-Man. You're in hero form. And Americano, you're playing Iron Man. You're in hero form. You're fighting the Rhino, who is stunned. So Spider-Man is the first player. Rhino's getting ready to attack Spider-Man. Spider-Man's ability allows him to draw a card when a villain initiates an attack against him. Does Spider-Man draw a card from this attack?
I'm probably going to get this one wrong, but I like to say yes, because the initiate is the very first step in that sequence, where the where it checks for stuns, I believe, is right after the initiating the attack. But I'm probably wrong.
Well, surprisingly, you are wrong. And this is where we've already seen there's sort of like a gap in the RRG. It doesn't tell you when to check for that stunned effect or anything like that. So there is a FAQ at the very bottom of the RRG. Let me see if I can find the exact text.
Now, the nice thing is, if you're playing solo, play it how you want. It's a fun game. You know, if you're playing, obviously, with other people, try to play, you know, according to the rules. But a lot of times I do this one wrong, because it just doesn't feel right doing it the way that they've suggested, you know, they put in the RRG. It doesn't feel like the spirit of that ability.
Yeah, so in the RRG FAQ, they say that this is a replacement effect, so it replaces the entire attack sequence. So sort of before you do anything, there is an effect at the very beginning that replaces the entire attack with removing the stun counter. So Spider-Man won't draw a card because no attack even initiates, which is crazy. I don't know how you replace something that hasn't initiated, but apparently you do. Continuing this situation, so now Rhino is getting ready to attack Iron Man, but Spider-Man says, I have a lot of defense. I'm going to defend. So Spider-Man exhausts to defend Rhino's attack. Now does Spider-Man get to draw a card, because there's no stunned status card anymore.
Now, I know the answer to this one, so I'm going to let Americana go, because this was one of the big ones when the game first came out, and, you know, a lot of people had different opinions.
So, Rhino initiated the attack against Iron Man, so I would say no, even though Spider-Man's going to be the target. Rhino did not initiate the attack against Spider-Man. Spider-Man jumped in the way.
Totally, that's right, because step two is when a player decides if they want to defend. So Rhino's going to initiate against Iron Man, and then Spider-Man's going to say, not today, you're fighting me.
In the end, I wish Spider-Man just had a no ability and just had six hand size. You know, the only hero is six hand size instead of five. Yeah, because it would have been a lot less confusing for most people, too. Because, sadly, the way his ability works, you know, it's very similar, but with more downside than if he just had plus one hand size in, you know, hero form. And it's made so many confusing issues for new players that it would have just been simpler to do it with a blank text box and a plus one hand size.
Yeah, or say something like, when Spider-Man defends, he draws a card. Boom.
That's what it should have been, and I think that's how it was originally, and it was over. During playtesting, they had said that it was a little too powerful.
All right, well, that was the easy situation. Let's move on to Claw. So now you guys are playing as Captain America with your shield equipped, defending against Claw. And Claw is getting ready to attack Captain America, who has his shield equipped, and you defend. The first boost card that's flipped up is Tiger Shark, which gives Claw a tough status. But Captain America has Retaliate. So is the tough status going to appear before or after Captain America retaliates?
I'll answer this one because of the way that it said in there, you resolve the boost specials before you resolve attack damage.
Correct. So you're probably going to get the next one right. So his second boost card, because Claw gets two, is Radioactive Man. And Radioactive Man makes you discard a random card from your hand. So if you had a card like Counterpunch or Shield Block in your hand, would you get to use that card before Radioactive Man makes you discard it?
Yeah, I'd say no. Using the same logic as Crimson before, you have to trigger that boost effect first.
Yeah, I know. What a true master of evil. So he can really foil with what's in your hand, especially as a protection player. You probably hate that before you get to use it. So those are two nasty boost abilities in Claw's kit.
And also, according to your sequence of events there, you would resolve Tiger Shark before you even checked Radio Man.
Yep, so if you wanted to cancel one of them, like with Preemptive Strike, even if you had like a 2-pip or a 2-boost icon card on the first card, you'd have to decide if you want to Preemptive Strike that before you see the next card. So the next card could be a 0 or a 3. So now, we'll make matters even worse against Claw. So he has an upgrade called Sonic Converter. When he damages you due to an attack, you become stunned. So if you had a counterpunch in your hand and you wanted to counterpunch Claw, but he was going to stun you from dealing damage, would you be able to play Counterpunch?
No, because the stun Counterpunch happens after the attack, and I believe that you would be stunned at the end of the attack.
Yeah, correct. I actually got a ruling back on this one today, because they didn't really define when like the action of defending ends, but it ends at the end of step 4. So Counterpunch and the Sonic Converter have the same triggering condition, even though they have different text. And one of them is a forced response. And in the rulebook, it says forced responses always trigger before just regular responses. So you'll get stunned right before you counterpunch. You could use counterpunch to clear stun, but you couldn't use it to deal damage. All right, one more scenario, probably the worst of all. Ultron. Everybody hates all the rulings for Ultron because they're so confusing sometimes, depending on which side of the argument you're on. So back to our first situation. You guys are playing Spider-Man and Iron Man. Spider-Man is engaged with one drone, and Iron Man is engaged with three drones. So Ultron Phase 1 reads, Forced Response. After Ultron attacks you, choose to either place one threat on the main scheme or put the top card of your deck into play down as a drone minion. As Spider-Man, you have decided to defend for Tony Stark. So who is the you in Ultron's response? Who would become engaged with a drone if you choose to create a drone?
I believe it would be Spider-Man because you have taken over the attack as the defender. But I could be wrong.
So we don't actually have an answer on that one, but I think that it is Spider-Man. I think that you become the new target of the attack based on that clause about becoming the target when you defend. So you would have to decide what's happening with that response trigger that happens at the end of the attack.
I have heard people say otherwise, you know, so it is something that we would definitely want a response on.
Yeah, I submitted rules questions for all of these Ultron ones, but we haven't heard back yet. So I was crossing my fingers for today. So the second Ultron question. So same game later. Now we're on Ultron Phase 2. So he has a forced interrupt instead of a response. It says, when Ultron attacks you, put the top card of your deck into play face down. Engage with you as a drone minion. Until the end of his attack, Ultron gets +1 attack for each drone minion engaged with you. So Iron Man is attacked again, but he has three drones, like I said, and Spider-Man only has one. So he decides to defend. So where does the drone from Ultron's interrupt get placed? And whose drones count to give Ultron this attack buff? The word you is used 3 times in that sentence.
And unfortunately, the word you has different meanings in different contexts,
it seems. That's a future rules lawyer debate.
I mean, I think I have an answer for this one. It's probably wrong, but... how I would, if I was playing this and how I would rule it, how I would play it, is the force interrupt happens before Spider-Man can defend. So Iron Man would get the drone. And then Spider-Man would become the defender. And because his ability is a passive ability with the +1 attack, it would be +1 attack for each drone engaged with Spider-Man, is how I would rule it. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think the answer on this one is actually still TBD. I've seen people argue it both ways. So we do know a couple things. So things kind of get out of hand. We're in the you territory now. It really would drive me crazy if there could be the word you and it interrupts twice and it's two different yous. But that might be the case. We do have one ruling. So someone asked, at what step in the attack sequence does Ultron 2's forced interrupt trigger? And Caleb answered, Ultron 2's ability triggers immediately after he initiates the attack. So it's basically the same trigger as Spider-Man's spider senses. So that happens before defenders are declared and the original target gets the drone. So that's good. We got that part right.
I got that right.
At least 50%. But now we're back to this other weird situation. So this interrupt triggers at the initiation, and it creates this lasting effect that gives Ultron plus one attack for each minion engaged with you. So the question is, can you change throughout the attack process from one target to another? And I don't know.
Now, me coming from a magic background, this is what we call a legacy effect. It's an effect that stays on the board until the end of the chain or the series of events that you're in. And legacy effects are fluid. They change with the environment of the table versus being static, which is they do this and then they don't continuously recheck. So the question is this a static effect, the plus one, and does it check at the same time that the drone gets into play, or is it a legacy effect that is fluid in when it does it constantly check the board state, or does it only check the board state at creation of the effect?
Well, you got too far ahead. I'll read you the third question, and then I'll tell you the answer. Oh, you go, Americano.
I will say, so I have a legal background, and I think that being able to change you would make this game not as accessible as the developers want it to. I think that they're going to, you know, they might make rulings on this specific card where you is the same person, the same identity, the same player for the entirety of the card. That's my guess is what's going to happen, because the idea behind this game is that it's a more accessible living card game. And if it constantly changes within the text of a single card, I think that's going to be, no one's going to want to play Ultron.
Yeah, I think if that second clause said, until the end of his attack, Ultron gets plus one attack for each drone minion engaged with the targeted player, then the targeted player is clearly defined in the rulebook as changing when you decide to defend.
Sure, I agree with that.
Question, because that'll answer Crimson's idea about fluid and static effects. So Ultron has some boost cards that force you to either spend a resource or put a drone into play. So if you draw one of those boost cards during an Ultron 2 attack, what happens with his static buff? And since you already asked the question of do fluid effects exist or static effects, I'll let you know. Caleb has answered that, and he said, someone asked, does Ultron 2's attack get modified, for instance, if a boost card results in a drone entering play? And he said, yes, if the number of drone minions engaged with you, so again, ambiguous you, changes before Ultron's attack resolves, then you recalculate Ultron's attack. So it sounds like there's this persistent or lasting effect that is constantly checked by things. But the only ruling we've seen is that the amount of minions can change fluidly. But we haven't seen anything that says the person that static effect is checking Iron Man and then Spider-Man defends. We haven't seen anything that tells us it would change who that static effect is checking.
Yeah.
So TBD. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, if again, I stand by my interpretation of that, how I would rule that, because and that gives me a little bit more credence that this is a legacy effect that is constantly checking the board state versus checking the board state when the effect happens and then doesn't change. Since we do know the effect changes, that tells us it is a legacy effect and not a static effect. Which means the ruling that I gave does have a little bit of backing with what Caleb said on, you know, that ruling that he gave with the change of minions change. And so I don't know. I mean, play it how you think, but if it was me, that's how I would play it because of my understanding of other card games.
I'm pretty sure I've played it every way, and I don't think I've ever played it correctly. So.
But the biggest question is, did you have fun playing it?
Exactly. I had a lot of fun losing to Ultron. So there's a lot of other questions we could cover about the attack procedure, like can Nova eliminate an attacker before it resolves? Yes. If a drone spawns, does it proceed to activate against you? Yes, because it's a minion activating after the villain, but only if it's during the villain's main activation. So There's dozens of more questions, but we can't address all of them. But what we can do is there was that four-step process that said, you know, the villain decides to attack and draws a boost card. You declare defenders, you flip the boost cards, and then you resolve damage. But there's probably a few more steps that you guys should think about in there when a villain attacking is happening based on the references we've seen. So the first thing you should do on a villain activation is check for confuse slash stun. If the right status effect exists, skip the whole process. Step two, the villain initiates an attack or attacks. It triggers both of those sort of interrupts. Then you deal the villain boost cards. After the boost cards are dealt, the players will be able to opt to defend with a hero or ally if they want, and that could change the target. You then flip over each boost card, resolving its ability, and then adding its boost icons. And then finally, once you've done that, you can calculate damage. And I think that that ends up being steps 1 through 6. So a few more than four, but still not super overly complicated. Did I miss anything in there? Anybody see anything?
I don't think so.
Cool. So that's been a lot of rules questions about that. So if you have questions on it, join our Discord or join that main Marvel Champions Discord. There's like a rulings thread there that I'm pretty sure people have notifications on 24/7 to answer your questions as they happen in game. So you can get an answer real fast if you need it. So my 1 hour timer literally just went over as we finished our second topic. That's super exciting. We almost planned the right amount of content for this week.
But you didn't cut yourself off. You were supposed to cut yourself off at the 1 hour.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I wasn't going to do it if I was talking, only if you were talking. But
you got to be a little fluid, too.
I want to ask the listeners, if they try these decks, I want to see which decks they liked, what they would change differently. Hit us up on the Facebook or Discord or anywhere we're at, and let us know if how wrong we are or if you agree with us.
Yeah, and go get clobbered in. Let us know how that goes, too. All right, well, we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Until then, enjoy your Marvel Champions.
Have a good one, guys.